אז היום אני רוצה להתייחס קצת ל, לאחד של הפרוסות של תרגול שלא כל כך מדברים הרבה על זה, אפילו מתלוננים הרבה, אז, וזה נושא גדול, מה לעשות עם המחשבות שלנו, אבל יש איזה, usually we have a kind of Vipassana teacher's response, which is let them go, da-da-da, you know. That's sort of a formula in retreats and in one-to-ones about which is either noting and letting them pass by, kind of not getting into the thought. So today I want to go a bit deeper into it, into mindfulness of thought. And it's the third of the fourth foundations, chitta, mind, and stream. Mind, I think you can look at it as a stream of the mind. Chitta is a stream of mind and what's in it. So it's the third of the four foundations. Not really. Perception is, mind is in perception, is needed for perception. So that's part of it. But when perception becomes, to identify something and engage with it, it becomes mind. But the first impression is not really citta, it's more contact. Senses, contact, yeah. So I think what I want to call the talk is voices in the mind and as raw material for liberation, and a completely different view of it, that thought, instead of being a problem, can be our springboard, keresh kvitsa, to our liberation. So another way of looking at thought is, and this is Kamavan, it's obviously in the four foundations of mindfulness. So it's right within the mindfulness category, but I'm going to take it in beyond, in a way, classical mindfulness in this talk and in discussion afterwards. I think I'll just go through the talk, right, and do make notes and so on and what for questions afterwards, but I think just it'd be good to record the talk from beginning to end, and then we can have questions afterwards rather than in the middle. So the first thing I think to be aware of how much chaos there is in the mind. It's an important observation. The mind is in chaos, is a mess. It feels unstoppable, feels we have no stopping it. We're not in control of it. It's in controlling us. And in the tradition, it's called the monkey, it's called the grasshopper that jumps, it's called the elephant that does damage in the crops of the fields of the farmers, that because it just goes crazy stamping on all the crops. It's many images about this, but it's seemingly a kind of almost uncontrollable, random series of stories, and it's so uncontrollable, it's amazing that it has so much power over us, and it really does, and it has huge, huge power, because it seems to be us, and that's quite a paradox. It seems to be us, and yet it's a mess and uncontrollable chaos. So how can that be us? But from all that chaos, we pull out a story and identify with a story that seems to be us, and then we can do anything with that story. We can go to war. I mean, it's just the war, how many wars are fought by an interpretation of the Bible, Nagid. On that basis we go to war. The Bible says this is my land. It's a thought. How much suffering, killing, it's the thought can, it feels very real, it generates views of reality, And yet it's, when you look at it, it's a big soup, chaotic mess. One of the things that thought does is it creates for us tasvitim, scenarios. Scenarios of what will be, what was, what we want like to have, and the creation of scenarios is based fundamentally on fear. It may not seem like that. It may seem like thoughts just running along, you know, happily, like the traffic in Rehov Nordau. But if you actually look at the intensity of thought, it's really based on fear. It's trying to work out what will happen to me, what is known. It is trying to stop the unknown. It is trying to stop unpredictable, mayeh. It's based on insecurity. The intensity of thinking is often an intensity of insecurity, of chosei bitachon, because we're trying to work out what's next, what do I want, what do I need, who am I, how do I negotiate the world, how do I get on in the world, how do I fix this, how do I do that, how what next, what jobs I've got, what's the rishima, what do I need to buy, what do I need to fix. You know, it's got that character of insecurity about it, and it's got almost a nervous activity of trying to sort out what next in our life, what the future will be, the to make it less unknown, less threatening, to solve our problems. So it's kind of the thought is trying to kind of eat into the world, the unknown world, to grasp, to litfos the ungraspable. The world is ungraspable. The thought is desperately trying to kind of catch the ungraspable world that slips through our fingers, and so that's why the intensity of thinking. So it's good to know that. It's good to understand that. It's good to put that in our mind as a thought. So thoughts are sankharas. Sankharas are kind of engravings or objects or forms. And sankharas are created by driven by karma. And the more we believe in them, the more they are strong and sankharas. They feed on ignorance. This is paticca samuppada, what we were working on with the DFP last week. The thought, the sense of believing a thought is fundamentally our non-seeing, is our ignorance, which I don't like the word very much. It's, shall we say, non-wisdom. It's a better, more compassionate. It's not seeing the constructions as constructions, but believing that they're real. It makes them real. It makes them seem real. So a thought is a story which seems real, and then we believe in it. Like our view of whatever view of democracy, so we go to war in Iraq for the sake of democracy. So there's a view, and we believe in democracy as a thought, and it's a very strong sankhara that makes people go to war, or any other view. So they're constructions in the mind, and they're very strong. Our belief in them, our sense that they are real, makes a dualism. Me is here and the world is built there. I and my stories, the narratives in the mind, they are the narratives is me. I'm looking at the narratives, they are story, whether it's me and the world, or the world called the narrative, the who I am, or the who the world is, whatever. So there's a few comments about the nature of thought. So in the Dharma practice, we actually have two directions to go, two or three directions, major directions with thought. And one direction, I want to talk about it first, is actually to redirect our thought. Is in a way contrary to vipassana, but is there in the deeply inside the tradition. Is actually to kind of redesign our thoughts to be more healthy and wholesome. We can only do this when we see thought, when we hold thought in our awareness. If we are totally invested in thought and identified, hizdahut, in thought, it's difficult for us to redirect it. Even my daughter is a CBT therapist, cognitive behavioral therapy, which is coming to be a very significant and very important new method in psychology these days, and it is more towards the Dharma than psychodynamic psychology or therapy, but it involves CBT, involves taking the narrative and being able to hold a narrative such as I can't cope with life, I'm hopeless or helpless, for example. Actually pulling it out of the mind as a narrative, seeing it as a narrative, and actually changing it. So it's something that we do in Dharma, changing the narratives for more healthy narratives. And it's a little different from the kind of classic Vipassana, which is actually letting narratives go and seeing that they come and go. Here we're actually working with them, but we have to see them to some extent to work with them. We can't do it without. That's written in the Samasati, by the way, in the document that I sent around. There's things about it there. So it's thoughts can be very helpful to our spiritual life. Imagine if we just change thoughts from anger and reactivity to metta. Metta is a thought in its formed. There's metta practice which is unformed. It is more energetic. But there's metta practice which is formed. May you be happy and peaceful. May I be happy and peaceful is a form, is a thought. It's a direct antidote to anger and resistance. Harmlessness, the thought of really not wanting to harm anybody or ourselves. The thoughts of thoughts about Dharma. Thoughts about renunciation, letting things go, living simply, loads and loads of possible thoughts which are actually helpful to us in the Dharma. So the Dharma is, you know, if you look in the text, not so much the Satipatthana Sutta, but there's a lot of text about rewriting the narratives, rewriting the scripts, with a little bit of awareness, rewriting, knowing that we can rewrite the scripts. And it's very important because we become what we think. We become, we are what we pay attention to. It's basic principle of Dharma. What we pay attention to, what is the story, is who we are. So if we rewrite the story, we become different. And so we can choose what's called skillful thoughts. We can choose skillful narratives. We can abandon unskillful narratives, and it's possible to do this. One way to do this is just very, very simply to see how much dukkha is created by unskillful thought. Thought that like, I must have, you know, got to have this thing, this car that my neighbor has, I've got to have that.
Mm.
You know, just think how much dukkha is coming from a thought that goes round and round, creating desire and anxiety and restlessness. And just let the thought replace it by my old Taranta, the Subaru I have in. Clearly, it's 20 years old Subaru is just fine. That's a good thought to have. I'm just fine. There's nothing wrong with my old car. It's really serving me very well. It's a good chamor. So, yeah, good. So you're off. So, no, appreciation, for example, a thought of appreciation is a good replacement for a thought of desire. Just a small, very small, silly example, but I'm just giving it to show that skillful thoughts reduce dukkha and are very much part of our practice. And the three poisons are manifest as thought: anger or reaction, reactivity, hate, negativity, or desire, neediness, wanting, busy with what's missing, what I have to have, or confusion and uncertainties and kind of being lost. All manifest in thought. Let's do a small exercise just now. Just take a minute, all of us, and just check what we're thinking. Watch every thought passing by right now. Just take a minute. See if we can rewrite them, rephrase them. We can talk about it later, this little experiment that we did. Rewriting the scripts is really necessary for us. And if we have heavy thoughts, real difficult thoughts, it's a lifesaver. It's really a lifesaver. I read a book some time back about obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD. And there is a guy in California that's a professor that's using mindfulness to treat it. And he says the first thing is to relabel the experience, like if there's an obsessive behavior, like washing your hands 100 times in the day, like Prime Minister's wife. I read somewhere in the newspaper that she has to wash her hands 100 times a day. So first thing is to relabel it, to see it as a thought and not as reality. My hands are, there's chaydakim on the hands, is reality, is identification. There's no separation there. I am the, there's the world is full of chaydakim. I have to wash my hands all the time. So see that as thought, firstly. And that's the first step, which needs a little mindfulness. Actually, it needs samadhi, in a way, more than mindfulness. It's the samadhi aspect of mindfulness, because it's the quietness and the intensity of observation allows the thought to be seen more clearly. OCD, patience, this wasn't so strong, of course, but enough to be able to see, oh, it's a disease that's making me think that my hands are constantly dirty. It's a narrative, it's not the reality that my hands are dirty all the time. I don't need to believe it, I just need to see that it's a thought. And he then went on to show people, not only is a thought that says, my brain is doing this. It's not the world is full of chaydakim, it's my brain is, there's a loop in the brain that's making me do this. And kind of getting that sense of, and then from there going into more rewriting the script. Every time I have to wash my hands, actually I'm going to go to the garden and dig the garden instead, or I'm going to do something else. Kind of rewriting into something positive. And the fourth stage in his therapy was getting new value in life, new values, establishing from the basis of something more healthy than obsessive washing of hands, a sense of valuing freedom without compulsion, valuing freedom, valuing non-disease, valuing healthy activity, valuing healthy thought. It's a kind of working with value. So it's just an example in therapy how the shifting the stream of thought needs some attention, needs some samadhi, but it's very much something that's part of the Dharma. But the Vipassana direction is in addition, Citta Vipassana, working with mind, third of the four foundations. And it's about, of course, seeing thought as thought, not believing it, not identifying with it, but just seeing it as a wave passing through the mind, carrying a story. At that point, we're out of the ignorance. The minute we see thought as just a wave of story passing by, and we do nothing, we have actually stopped that or reduced that karma, that control of that story on us. And it's a little bit of wisdom. Every time we do that, we've introduced a little bit of wisdom instead of ignorance. It's the non-identification. And I always talk in retreats, you probably all heard me give the image of the train, because it's a nice image that thought is like a train coming into the station. Lots and lots of carriages, one joint to another, joint to another, because thought is like that, it's a whole train. In English you call it train of thought. It's a train, rakevet, comes into this station. And instead of getting onto the train, we just let we stand on the platform and let the train go away without us. And it's quite a nice image. The train of thought comes into the station and then leaves, and we're standing on the platform. We don't need to get on the train when it takes us to Haifa and we don't even know how we got there. We just get on the train and whoop, suddenly we're in Haifa. So it's not only wisdom is not only about seeing thought as thought, But especially in some Dharma traditions more than others, the Mahasi practice of noting thought is very specific. It's noting thought as thought, but even giving it a word, like judgment, thought, thought of judgment, thought of judgment, thought of confusion, thought of confusion, you know, or just thinking, give it a word. Noting is a part of the Mahasi. But I mean, it's just, you don't need to do that. It's a sense of just seeing them, non-reactive awareness, seeing that thought arises, seeing that it contains a story, and seeing that it goes. And that's basically working with thought in the Vipassana tradition. And noting is sometimes useful, but it's not necessary. And as you do this, what happens is, actually the thoughts slow down, because they are so speedy. And you know, you all know this, at the beginning of our life as in meditation practice, they drive us crazy, the thoughts. They're just so many and so chaotic and so non-stop and so crazy and so overwhelming. We just go, as soon as we see that, because they're waterfall, you know, flood, a tsunami of thought, we go crazy. But slowly, by seeing thought, it slows down. Like everything that we see in the eye of meditation, eye of awareness, it actually reduces its hold on us and becomes slower, weaker, and less dominant. Anything we see. If we look at anger, it becomes less dominant, less uncontrolled, less powerful. If we look at the thought, it becomes less powerful, less controlling us. We can look at it with Vipassana, watch it as phenomena. So it slows down, and in the end you don't need to think that much. You really don't need that much thought. You realize thought is based on fear, you just don't need so much. You keep practicing and you'll be amazed how little thought you need. You negotiate life beautifully in spontaneously, and you only need one thought about everything. First one. You don't need a second one. First one is good enough, that's it. One thought is all you need. Let go here. Let go there. Thought says this. Thought says that. You don't need the second thought, and the third thought, and the fourth thought. I think I have a quote here from I hope I brought it. I did, but I left it in my bag in the other room. Never mind. Maybe I will. Maybe, do you mind to get my bag, my shoulder bag, my black bag? It's in the bedroom. And there's some papers in there, and one of them is a quote I wanted to read to you that I gave you, actually. It's Mindfulness in Plain English. I gave you that article. It has a very nice small description I want to read to you about just this, about very simply the power of watching thought as it is. And thanks. Possibly. Never mind, I don't think I've got it. I think I left it at home. Too bad. So anyway, have a look at it. It's just in two paragraphs. It's not. You've got it. Read it. It's just two paragraphs, and it summarizes in a very beautiful way the working with thought as citta vipassana, the seeing thought, as waves in the mind. So that's really what we do in the vipassana, the non-reactive awareness that settles the mind, and it needs respect for thought. And this is the thing, that thought needs respect. We it's powerful, and so we do need to take it very, very seriously, and it's very important that we do this work with thought. We give thought respect, we realize its power over us, we realize its power to direct us to kill somebody, we realize its power to make us depressed or happy. We just have to, you know, take it very, very seriously, thought, and we do, all of us. So the 90% of the questions that come to in one-to-ones in retreats is about thought. Or a lot of it is about thought. So with respect for its power, with awareness, with non-reactive awareness, we watch the story come and go, and we don't invest in it. We watch the train come and we let it go by. So that's the second thing. It's about mindfulness. The third thing I want to say is more subtle, and that is thought as an agent of liberation. It's more subtle. That if we see thought, it's seeing thought as mind. So we may see thought as story, and we may step back and see, okay, there's a story passing by, but we can also see that this story is a construction in mind, and that it's made of mind, this thought, and it comes from mind, it goes back to mind, and so it gives us a window on mind, and it gives a window, like a thought is mind. Mind is awareness. We need awareness. We need to be aware. We're aware now. You're hearing, you're present, you know you're existing. We're aware. I know my hands are here. I know I'm existing. I know words are coming out. You know words. So this is all mind. And we go around in life basically not knowing mind by just being in the form. I have to understand the words. That's not in the mind. Looking at the mind that is understanding the words, but listening to the words. So thought is like a wave, and it's made of mind, and it tells us about the ocean. The thought is a wave in the ocean, and it tells us about the ocean, about the mind itself, and it has. If we can begin to get close to thought, we see it's only made of awareness. It is nothing. It's empty, and on there is a story created by habit, that's a little boshala, that's stuck on it. But actually, if we look at that, we can look through and see it's sort of empty, and we see mind in this wave. It's made of mind. It's made like the wave is made of water. So we begin to just look at water and not at the story, at the wave. And it's what I asked you, where did it come from? Where does it go to? What is it made of, a thought? Ask that question. What's it made of? What's a thought made of? Mm-hmm. do not listen to thoughts or attend to whatever arises in the mind, but instead examine where the thought or the image comes from, where it stays and where it goes. If we do this for long enough, we will discover that all thought forms are empty and that there is nothing substantial in the mind. Keep the mind in its own place, without changing it, without distraction, and at ease, in its state of clear emptiness. Do not attempt to stop the mind. Do not follow it. In this way we are freed of suffering and we go in peace. The happiness is a deep calm and we call it serenity. This happiness is derived from a connection to the space of bliss that is primal awareness. And that's a Dzogchen quotation based on the Tibetan work with just mind as empty. It gives you a flavor of it. I'll read Krishnamurti. You can change your ideas, you can change your thought, but thought is always conditioned. Whether it is thought of Jesus or Buddha or you or me, it's still thought. And therefore one thought is in opposition to another thought. And when there is opposition, there is conflict between two thoughts. And the result is a continuity of thought. In other words, the change is still within the field of thought. And change within the field of thought is no change at all. One idea or set of ideas has merely been substituted for another. In other words, if you think you've changed, but you just change your thought, you haven't changed, because you're still in the world of believing thought. Ken. Ken. The lo bastira ze shnei masbulim. Ze olach biyachan. Seeing this whole process, is it possible to leave thought and bring about a change outside the field of thought? All consciousness, surely, whether it is of the past, the present, or the future, is within the field of thought. A radical change can take place only outside the field of thought, and the mind can leave the field only when it sees the boundaries of the field and realizes that any change within this field is no change at all. And this is real meditation. So, I want to suggest that you can investigate thought and see that it's like an empty vessel, empty wave energy passing through the mind. It comes and it goes. And it, in a way, if you really see thought as fundamentally empty, you become empty, because thought is you. There's a very nice concept in the Tibetan tradition, or especially Tibetan non-dual tradition, of the self-liberation of thought. That thought, because they're empty, they make you empty. Because if you follow a thought and see its emptiness, you become empty. You realize emptiness. Emptiness is you. You get a window on nothing, because you see that the thought is nothing, so there is nothing. So it's an invitation to let go of self as you see the emptiness of thought. It takes you with it. It replaces all these forms with space. And with freedom, with spaciousness, with a sense of space and sense of freedom. So, I know, and this is not a Dzogchen seminar, so I'm not going to go into it, but A lot of old practitioners have been very strongly influenced by the Dzogchen teaching, the Tibetan non-dual teaching, or other non-dual teachers, in which thought is seen as not a problem, not to be changed and not to be manipulated, despite the conflict with what we said before, the Misbar Echad. And as fundamentally free. And one of the most important thoughts that really, especially in the Advaita, brings you to a liberated state of mind is the thought, I am, as a kind of primal original thought. And seeing that as empty, empties the self. Seeing that primal thought as empty and having no content, it's a very powerful form of liberation of the self. So I want to read a little bit of one or two phrases from, I think, to me, the greatest Dzogchen text. Oh, I have it here, the other one, but no, never mind, it's too late now. I can read it later. I'm now somewhere else. It's called The Flight of the Garuda. The Flight of the Garuda, you know it, Suni.
There is a Belam Shabda because there are two versions.
There are versions that... I have the one translated by Keith Dauman.
Okay.
What's his name? Shakpa?
Shakpa.
Yeah. Because I like the translation. It's beautiful and inspired. And I'll give you just make a few small quotations from it. Do not seek to alter your thoughts in any way. Leave them in their natural state without forcing them or fixing them. Let them alone as empty radiance without clinging to them, and thus allow self-expression. In other words, they form by themselves. It's karma, don't forget, that's making a thought. In other words, a thought's happening by itself. Well, you know that. We're not in control. They come, they arrive by themselves. Allow this self-expression to release itself by itself. It releases itself because no one's in control. So it has this sense of letting it release itself, letting it liberate itself. Let them be, without turning it into a thing, without meditation, without effort, and leaving no trace. Treat all past thought as the path of a bird in the sky that leaves no tracks. All present perception as the space that is clear without any dust. And all future thought as the water in a pool. Without cultivating or modifying any thought, with a free and easy attitude, leave thoughts alone in their natural state of open space. Do not be disheartened when, during meditation, many thoughts disturb you and you think, this is not meditation. The mind may be actively generating thought, but because mind is empty, thought is also empty. Since whatever arises in a state of presence, do not attempt any alteration based on any judgment or any measuring. Just leave it all alone in its natural, authentic, uncontrived, meaning unconstructed, unchanged state. In that way, thought will certainly be released into its own natural purity. I mean, it's a great way of re-looking at thought. Thought is pure because it's naturally arising from karma, from life, by itself. So in its basic state, it's pure. We turn it into problems, we turn it into issues, we make it solid, etc. No experience is possible anywhere but in the mind. So there is nothing to see other than that seen at the moment of vision. No experience is possible anywhere but in the mind. So there is nothing to meditate upon other than mind. No experience is possible anywhere but in the mind. So there is nothing to do other than what is done in the mind. No experience is possible anywhere but in the mind, so there is no method to be sustained. There is no goal to be reached that is not in the mind. So look and look and look and look again and look at your mind. Project your attention into fields of space and watch the mind, the nature of your mind, see if it moves. When you're convinced by observation that the mind doesn't move, concentrate upon the mind inside and look carefully for where is the thought coming from. When you decided that there's no place, no entity responsible for the patterns of thoughts, look for the shape of the mind. Look at the color, look for its color, look for its center, look for its outside. Search for an inside, search for an outside in thought, we're talking about. Finding no distinction between inside and outside, you arrive at total presence, which is as vast as the sky. This freedom, this total presence, has no center, has no outside, has no inside or outside. It has knows no blocks, no barriers. It's a vast expanse of space. It's all just a play of the mind. So it's a big vision, but it gives you an indication and a direction of another place to work with the thought. This beautiful vision of thought being the natural play, basically free in itself. We can make it control us. It's our movement that takes it as truth and takes it as control and takes it as this and takes it that. But if we just let go and watch it as the free, empty space of mind, see through it, if you like, it's a liberating practice. So it is different fundamentally from number one, which is to take thought seriously and change the narrative. It is different, it is another place to go, but I think our practice has to embody different things like that. I think our practice can embody both. We can rewrite the scripts and we can see that the scripts are fundamentally empty and they are not in paradox. This is not a paradox. Paradox in the mind, analytic mind that wants to have things logic, but in the consciousness it's not a paradox.
Why?
Because if we have an angry thought, we really need to give an antidote to it, and we apply love. And so at this moment, that's what I'm doing. At another moment, I can see the angry thought is just empty space. And both of them work, and both of them may be needed by a different person at a different time, in a different moment, in a different situation, and a different stage in their practice. The liberation of thought through thought is much more advanced, in a sense. It's much more difficult as well. But why not? You know, I mean, go there. And you can do it a little bit. So if it's more difficult beginning, you know, but a little bit you can do it. And it's very helpful. Also helpful not to take it so seriously. To see the empty space of mind is another, in a way, another antidote, in a certain way. So yeah, oh wow, it's klum. This narrative, it's just made of nothing. It's an important insight. If it's made of nothing, I'm also made of nothing. Because I'm identified, if I'm an angry person and I see anger is made of nothing, then I'm nothing. It's like, it's, don't need to, you know, it's helpful to see through. Get on, Rega, so I'll stop now, we'll have a moment of meditation first before the questions, then I'll come to you, Gideon. Yeah, happily.
רק משפט שככה להחזיר אותנו לרוח התרוודית, למי שזה מעניין אותו אותה, אז במג'ימה ניקאיה, בספר של הדרשות באורך בינוני, ככה הספר הזה נקרא, אז הדרשה מספר 20 מתעסקת באופן מאוד מאוד מפורט במחשבות, נותן שם 5 דרכים איך לעבוד עם מחשבות, 5 דרכים מאוד מאוד קונקרטיות, מאוד לא רק להתבונן בהן או משהו כזה, ממש ממש איך הוא מתחיל מהקל אל הכבד, והוא מתחיל קודם כל בהבחנה, ובשביל ההבחנה הזאת, כמו שסטיבן אמר, צריך לראות סוד אל סוד, צריך לזהות, זאת מחשבה, זה לא האמת, או זה לא מי שאני. אבל אחרי ההבחנה הזאת, הבודה מציע כתלוג של אם זו מחשבה מועילה, או מיטיבה, או שיש בה תועלת, או אם זאת מחשבה לא מועילה ולא מיטיבה, שאין בה. זה להתנהג איתנו.